I'm Kate Remington with Chris Heise. He's the music director of the Greater Connecticut Youth Orchestras and violinist Lara St. John, who will be the soloist in the Sibelius Violin Concerto at the concert at the Klein in Bridgeport on November 24th. It's really wonderful to have both of you here. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
I'm just so excited about this concert with the Principal Orchestra. And Lara, how did you come to be part of what's going to be a really amazing performance?
Well, it was actually a little bit last minute. Chris got in touch with me and said, is there any way that you might be in town on the 24th because our soloist has had an injury?
Oh, no.
And, astonishingly enough, I mean, I'm on the road more than half the time, but that just happened to be a weekend where I'm here, and I was able to come up to go up last Saturday for the first rehearsal, and it all just kind of like worked out very, very nicely.
Wow! So, Chris, do you guys know each other from like way back?
Not exactly.
Well,
no,
not really. I mean, we have a lot of mutual friends.
Yes.
But I think didn't we just sort of meet like just last Saturday, Chris?
Yes, we met as the downbeat of the Sibelius was occurring. But you know, we've been friends on Facebook for a few years, I think, because we have lots of mutual friends. And I would see some of Lara's posts because of that. And I probably just hit the friend button at one point just to see what would happen. And, I've been following her that way. And then when our soloist was injured, I was racking my brain trying to think of who could step in at the last minute to play Sibelius, of all things. Mm. And I thought, oh, Lara, wow, let me see what she says. So I sent her a note and there we are.
Wow, that is so cool. So, Lara, is this a piece that's in your repertoire pretty much all the time that you don't have to, like, go back and dredge up memories and rehearse a lot? Or is it something that you had to, like, go back and revisit?
One revisits a little bit. But I would say it's I have a very strange kind of, first of all, muscle memory, and second of all, like, memory for music. So Sibelius is among the sort of 10 or so concertos I could do on one day's notice. And then I have another 10 that I could do on sort of 10 minutes notice.
Wow.
So I did have to, but yes, it's in my repertoire. I've done it many times. I feel like I haven't been asked for it a lot really lately. I think my last time was maybe in Edmonton or Calgary, and maybe about 6 years ago.
Wow.
But I've done it a lot, and yeah. And it's always such a rush. It's such an awesome piece, both for performers and audiences, I think.
Yeah, what I love about it is how chilly it sounds in those opening measures. You really just get a sense of a Finnish winter in Helsinki.
It's kind of a very bleak beauty in a way.
It is, yeah. And Sibelius actually conducted the first performance in 1904 in Helsinki. But it was a total disaster because the soloist, he'd finished it just a few days before, maybe a couple weeks before, and the soloist didn't have time to prepare, and the premiere was a disaster. So he went back and revised it, and in 1905 it was re-premiered with Richard Strauss on the podium, actually. Germany.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard recordings. There was a young Finnish violinist who got a hold of that original version, which apparently is really, really, really difficult. And have you ever looked at that? Have you ever seen the original version?
I have not, no. Uh-uh. And it doesn't get played. I think I read somewhere that the last time it was played really sort of officially in public was in the 90s at some point.
Yeah, that's when that Finnish hotshot violinist said, well, I can play it. So.
Right.
Wow.
So, Lara, what do you love about it?
Well, there's sort of a, obviously it's a standard, of the violin repertoire. So I've been hearing it since I was a little kid. And there was a time, I guess I was probably around 6 or 7, when I thought to myself, oh, that'll be the pinnacle of my life when I can play the Sibelius concerto. And and of course, by the time I ended up learning it, then I was thinking, oh, it'll be the pinnacle of my life when I can play the Berg violin concerto. So you always sort of keep on moving, I suppose, with your violin concerto life pinnacle thoughts. But everybody loves it. I mean, it's just, there's, like you said, it's chilly opening. There's a really sort of dark beauty to it. And it's funny how it does. It just sounds like Finland, or rather possibly northern Saskatchewan, where a lot of Finnish people actually ended up going. And there is that sort of, you know, the darkness for 23 hours a day, and the snow and the bleakness. And in some way, he managed to make that into some kind of sound, which everybody can appreciate. And you know, it's kind of, I think it's got to be. Well, I don't know all of his pieces, but when it comes to Sibelius, this is got to be definitely top five.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And what the orchestra is doing too, underneath the soloist and supporting the soloist, is so interesting too. And in rehearsals, Chris, what have been some of the things that you've been bringing out or telling the kids in the principal orchestra about their accompaniment for Lara?
Yeah, so you know, a lot of the counter melodies that happen within the accompaniment. It's a very symphonic piece, so the orchestra actually plays, you know, a pretty significant role in that. So talking about that and saying, well, you know, this isn't your normal, not normal, maybe that's not the right word, but this isn't your standard violin concerto where the orchestra is sort of in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, the orchestra really does get involved. To say specifically what I've asked them to bring out is, off the top of my head, is kind of tough. But, in general, you know, talking about being part of the experience and really accompanying and not just being sort of wallpaper in the back, is a lot of what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
And especially there are these great orchestral interludes that happen where the violin soloist is sitting out. And it's such fantastic music. And those happen in each of the movements. And the kids really enjoy those moments, too.
Yeah, I'll bet there's something really cinematic about the music in the concerto in particular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that there's like a really instant connection with the kids in the orchestra. And gosh, Lara, you mentioned that at six your goal was to play this concerto. So when did you actually start learning to play the violin?
Oh, well, to play the actual violin, I was 2 and a half.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I know, it's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, so of course, you know, just going to, I think my first summer at Meadowmount, I was probably 6. And you know, of course, this is one of the big ones that people play all the time, that students learn when they're, you know, in their late teens, 20s, maybe sometimes even younger. And so I just heard it a lot. And I always loved, especially we were just talking about the orchestral interludes. I mean, the one sort of slightly annoying bit of being a soloist is you don't get to do that awesome B flat minor duty in the first movement. It's like, it's kind of like right before the cadenza. It's just such a cool tune. I just always want to play along. I may in fact do that.
Well, you're welcome to. The kids would love that. And I have to say, I mean, the kids, you know, I've gotten feedback from the rehearsal where, you know, Lara came for the first time, and the kids were just blown away by her and thought that she was just the, you know, the bee's knees, which she is, of course. But you know, they are so excited to be able to perform with her. So it's a really special treat.
Yeah, well, I can imagine, because you know, you've launched your career as a professional, and you're a well-established artist, but you're still really pretty young. So your student days weren't that long ago, and
they were pretty long ago.
Oh well.
But but I mean, whenever I'm asked, you know, I'll do master classes or something in various places. So it's, I mean, I don't teach on a regular basis, but I actually have a lot to do with students around, well, I guess kind of around the world. So yeah, it's always nice to be able to sort of give a little to you know, to folks who are younger and who are going to be the future.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, as you were studying music as a kid and a little bit older, you know, one of the things all of us encounter as we're learning to play an instrument, I still am kind of a pianist, but, you know, you get to this plateau and it's just, you think okay, this is it. I have met my match here with this etude or concerto or sonata or whatever. So what kind of things did you do or do you still do when you feel like you've like hit a wall?
Well, I don't...
Maybe you don't.
big-headed, but, well, I don't really often hit walls. And I think part of that is because I started so young, and as we've already established, ridiculously young, I think that the way I try to explain it to folks is it's almost like a language. Like, for example, you don't really think about how you just formulated your last sentence. And for me, it's like I don't, it's just a language. Like, sometimes people are like, "What? Aren't you scared of dropping the violin?" It's like, I'd probably be more likely to drop my hand. You know, it's so part of me, I guess, at this point that, and sometimes I'm kind of a little bit like when it's new music or new pieces and I find something to be not worthwhile, like that it's like so difficult, but it doesn't actually add anything to the piece, I will change it.
Wow.
So, yeah, because, you know, I mean, a lot of composers are, you know, pianists or maybe wind players or something, and they don't write things violinistically. And you know, I'm not going to turn myself into a pretzel to do something that won't add anything musically to the piece. So, I mean, in my opinion, you know, yes, technique is important, but it's just a means to an end. So I just want it to be as easy as possible for me to be able to, you know, bring across what I think about the piece to an audience.
Wow.
So, yeah. And I'm also lucky in that, you know, for a violinist, it's good to have very long fingers, long arms, and, you know, I'm particularly kind of,
designed.
I don't want to say well endowed, that sounds like wrong for what I'm talking about here, but yeah, so a lot of things are easier for me than they might be perhaps for somebody smaller.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Just physically.
Yeah, because
yeah.
that's a big part of it. That's why composers write etudes, to deal with these physical things, you know, getting around the instrument or dealing with, you know, expressive.
Oh, right, and yeah. I've done my share of scales of etudes and work and all that sort of stuff, but you know, eventually it's all it is to be able to express yourself.
Yeah.
So it's just to be able to hone your medium to get ideas across, basically.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of performances with youth orchestras?
Actually, not really. I think this might only be maybe my third.
Wow.
Yeah, after, actually, I recall one with San Francisco Youth Symphony and Singapore Youth Symphony.
Wow.
And now, Youth Symphony of Greater Connecticut.
Which is just so amazing. So what are you kind of hoping the kids will take away from being able to perform with you, with a soloist of your caliber who's so inspiring?
Well, I mean, I hope they go home and they, if they've been, you know, it's a tough age, high school. You're basically coming into your own and deciding what it is you want to do. And, of course, going into music full-time is not necessarily something that I recommend to young folks. But I do recommend sticking with it because just the love of an instrument and the ability to play and then the ability to then appreciate more what you can hear in a concert hall is really valuable. And I hope that it encourages, it's a huge orchestra, actually, all like 150 of these kids or however many there are, just to keep on loving music.
Yeah.
And ideally to stick with their instrument, even though they may go into medicine or law or something else. But, you know, to always have that as a love.
Wow, that's so great.
It just adds so much to the quality of life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And
it doesn't mean that you have to be somebody like me who's on the road. Like, you know, you can still appreciate it and play for yourself or your friends. And, you know, and it's just so many times I've heard from people saying, oh, I wish I had stuck with it after youth orchestra or after having lessons when I was a kid or whatever. So, yeah, I hope that kind of love of what it is I do can translate and encourage them.
That's so great. And you have a connection with another one of the works on the concert, too, Super Maximum by Kenji Bunch. Chris said you guys know each other. You guys are friends.
Yeah, Yeah. Kanji's a terrific young-ish composer, and he's also a very thoughtful writer. He has kind of a blog, and he thinks about a lot of things that have to do with music and the world, and I think that comes out in his stuff. He's a really great guy. Yeah. So I was really pleased to see they were doing that piece. I've never heard it, actually.
I watched a youth orchestra, it was in Portland, Oregon, playing it earlier today, and it's an incredible piece. At some points, it sounds almost like there are taiko drummers, and then it has these really beautiful lyrical passages. And so, Chris, I'll bet the kids are having a fun time learning that one.
Oh, yeah, they
absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, they absolutely love that piece. And it's about, the old chain gangs that used to work in the South, and Kenji, in the notes, talks about that it was sort of a form in and of itself of racism and oppression and all of that stuff. So, you know, the opening part of the piece is actually just snare drum with brushes. And so it actually sounds like you can hear the chain gang sort of shuffling down the street with this opening percussion line. And then the violas actually start the melody, which sounds like a spiritual, some sort of sad and melancholy spiritual that you might hear from a chain gang as they're, you know, doing whatever work they were assigned to do that day. It's a pretty powerful piece, yeah. I have to say. I discovered it at a conference that I attended back in June, and I thought, I really have to do this. So yeah. I came home, and here we are.
Wow. Well, Lara and Chris, anything you'd like to add about the concert or what you hope people will take away from it?
Something that I think tends to be interesting for audiences is I play on a Guadagnini, actually, from 1779, and I'm incredibly lucky, especially for pieces like this Sibelius, because, well, first of all, I'm a pretty loud player, but this violin is a powerhouse.
Wow.
and sometimes, you know, like, obviously Sibelius was later than 1779, but if you think about it, like, Beethoven was 9 years old when this violin was made, and, you know, it's still, in a way, speaking.
Wow.
So that kind of thought, you know, from if like just knowing what's up there playing can sometimes be kind of transformative for an audience. So I like to mention that sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And you just wonder if the violin could speak, the tales that it would tell and the experiences that it has had with all the people who have played it.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. Yeah. Chris, anything you'd like to add?
Well, this is the first sort of official concert of our new name, the Greater Connecticut Youth Orchestras. For a long time, as listeners may recall, we were the Greater Bridgeport Youth Orchestras, and we've sort of outgrown that name, and we decided, took an official action and changed the name back in September, and I think everybody's exciting. I mean, excited. We represent almost 40 towns from around the state of Connecticut with 350 students, so we're much farther reaching than the greater Bridgeport area, which is really exciting. And, you know, it's not that we want to give up our Bridgeport roots, because that's not what the aim of the name change is for. It's to be sort of more inclusive of everybody who is now a part of our organization. So being a part of this first concert, I think, as the Greater Connecticut Youth Orchestras is going to be something special. And we've now divided the concerts in half, too, so that it's not Orchestra Palooza all day on Sunday afternoon. But there's a concert at 1 o'clock and then another one at 5:30. And the 5:30 one is the one that Lara's on.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you both so much for taking some time and telling us about the concert, sharing some stories. It's really been fun to talk with both of you.
Great to talk to you, too,
Kate.
Thank you.